I'm Alana Roche.
And I'm Dr. Lauren Costine. And welcome to The Consciousness Salon.
The Consciousness Salon is a conversation where psychologist Dr. Lauren partners with Alana Roche, the boundary boss, and community activists to raise individual and collective consciousness through enlivening conversations about psychological and social justice issues.
We will be discussing topics ranging from gaslighting and triggers to identity issues and internalized phobias, and why looking at the world and ourselves from a psychological lens improves mood, increases our sense of self, meaning, life purpose, and so much more. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Consciousness Salon. Alana and I are here today after a bit of a break. It's been quite a year, obviously, as we're all having it together in many ways. And we were about to record our next episode right before COVID hit. And we're going to get into all of that. And then, of course, each of us have been having our own experience, Alana having hers and me having mine. In many different ways, just managing it for me initially, psychologically and emotionally, and then business getting really busy in a way that was unusual, and moving everything to Zoom was really interesting and then intense. And then Alana, you were having your own kind of really interesting experience at the beginning of COVID, right? And then, of course, what we're going to talk about today really launches into, you know, the what we've been experiencing the last month, right? So, but we did want to just check in and say we've missed you all, and we're really happy to be recording today. And, you know, we have... we're going to be getting back on track as much as we're as is possible for us with our schedules and with everything that we're all managing at this time in this really unusual and interesting place we find ourselves in this world. And we'll get into that. But today we really want to talk about racial justice allyship. And we're going to get into a number of different things. But I want to really turn it over to Alana. She's going to be leading today's podcast, and I will be facilitating and supporting in the best way that I can.
Thank you, Lauren.
Yeah, take it away, Alana.
Yeah, you know, and also I just want to just tell our listeners that, you know, thank you for supporting our podcast, and thank you for tuning in always. And, you know, we've been getting some feedback asking, you know, checking in and wondering when our next episode is. And, you know, the truth is 2020 has definitely left an imprint. It started off with really such great, there was actually a lot of goodness that started this year for me, and then just really was able to really develop my self-care practices, and it felt like I was back in the flow finally. I found the flow and really was able to get anchored in that. And then the beginning of May, this is post-COVID. And, you know, my thoughts are with everybody who's had to go through the COVID experience, because the COVID experience was no joke, impacting unemployment, and not to mention wellness in general, everyone's health. That's the component there. I'm hoping that those of you who are listening are healthy and safe.
And then the mental health, right? Like,
yeah. Physical health, yes.
Yeah, physical health first, of course. And then I've never
in my whole career life seen, you know, kind of an opening to everyone, sort of most people being impacted on one in one way or another around their mental health, whether it's anxiety or depression or loneliness or fear or being impacted by family members getting sick or, you know, the mere, you know, your job being furloughed and you don't know what's going to happen next, and ultimately all this uncertainty, right?
So much uncertainty. And yes, and the mental health was, I mean, I've never been quarantined before. Global quarantine. I mean, what, who knew that we were going to experience that? We did not see that coming, right?
No, but, no. I mean, even though apparently there were some very, you know, well-informed people that have been talking about it for a while.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. The rest of, I didn't get the memo. So
the denial was real. I didn't get the memo either.
But we did it, you know, the quarantine was intense and it did test our mental capacity. It did test our ability to really circle back to those self-care practices. To really implement them and stay really vigilant. And the beginning of May, I mean, once I was able to find my flow and find my routine through COVID, and grateful that I did not get sick and those close to me did not, but my heart and prayers are with those who did. And I'm hoping that everyone is now healthy. Starting May was when, that young boy, or I shouldn't say young man, Ahmad, was chased down and shot several times. And that was kind of when I started to get reactivated again in terms of this year and my activism. Because I did take a break. I had to... towards the end of last year, I did need to kind of pull myself away and go within and do radical self-care. So beginning of May, when I found out about this story, Ahmed Arbery, I realized that it just re-traumatized and re-triggered all the things I know already about this country, about the history. And I came across that video and I posted it on Instagram and I put hashtag modern day lynching 2020. And when I did that action, it just profoundly set me right back to why I show up in spaces the way I do. Because it hasn't stopped. And why would it? Why would it when, at least nationwide, we have failed to address it? So that is when I didn't actually get started with George Floyd. My process started with Ahmed.
Right. Wow.
And I jogged for him. I signed petitions. I made sure everybody, I tried to lift up his life and his name as much as I could. You know, he was going to turn 26 on Mother's Day. Right? This young man. So for me, starting with him, and then learning about Breonna Taylor after that. And then learning how her boyfriend was arrested. I mean, the injustices are insane.
Insane.
So here we are. You know, and then I think by the time George Floyd hit, it all came crumbling down, right?
Yeah, no, I've never seen it like this.
in my life. That again?
I've never seen a tipping point like this in my lifetime regarding racial justice, white supremacy, anti-blackness. Like this, I know there in the 60s, there was a lot going on, right? Okay, I froze out. So I have never, I saw the tipping point happen with George Floyd, and I have never in my lifetime, was born in the 60s. So I've never in my lifetime seen anything like this regarding racial justice, white supremacy, and anti-blackness come to light in this way. And it's so important that this is happening. And this is why we want to talk about it today. We were actually going to talk about this. We were already developing this next podcast to be about white fragility in Robin DiAngelo's book, right? And that was in the works. And then COVID hit and we took the break we needed to take. And then this happened. And so we'll be getting into that too. But the point is, I've never seen protests like this. I've never seen white, black, people of color gather together to protest and to create change and to get into action, like real action, not just talk, but things that create real change.
And yeah, I mean, I definitely haven't experienced it in my lifetime. I know that uprisings have occurred in our history. In the 60s specifically, it is definitely has, from what I understand, has a lot of energy, similar energy to yes. the civil rights movement. But today is a day where I believe what we're witnessing is really the result of the perfect storm.
Yes.
It was the pandemic, right? So the pandemic caused us to be in quarantine. And then once we were in quarantine, people are now losing their jobs. They're now unemployed. And folks now they're not attached to their oppressive jobs. And maybe some of them do really, really love their jobs, but I know a lot of folks were in oppressive jobs. And here we are now having the time to actually be still enough to not only reflect on what you really want and reflect on what you really want to achieve in this lifetime, but also still enough to recognize the injustices that are going on every single day. Yep. From corner to corner, everyone is now looking at their phones and seeing it with their own eyes. We don't have to rely on mainstream media news right. to decide what truth we get to have access to. In the palm of our hands, people are now policing the police.
Right.
Exactly. They have been, actually.
Right. They have been.
This is not new.
No.
But because of this, because technology has given the people the opportunity to police the police, which is a lot of what, was a huge driving factor for the Black Lives Movement when it originally founded, right? Because everyone started seeing this in real time, the injustices.
Stuff that was hidden for yes, centuries.
Of course, yeah.
On yes. many levels.
Yeah. Yep, and swept under the rug. So here we are seeing institutional racism really just put in front of us. And it's forcing us all to decide who we are. We have to decide today who we're going to be. And I know that when it came to this like kind of global reckoning, we all felt it. That collective consciousness, that collective was real. I know I tapped into it. I know you tapped into it, Lauren.
I saw so many people tapping into it. Like I've never before in my life in the white community ever.
Yeah. I got messages from folks I never expected to have this conversation with as well.
Right.
So here folks are waking up in a major, major way. And I'm grateful for it. Yeah. I'm grateful for the youth who have the energy and the capacity to be out there in the streets. I'm grateful for this multi-ethnic, multi-racial response. You know, because the truth is, I think the young generations got the memo, right? They're not, they're not fooled. You know, our generations were fooled in some capacity.
Many ways.
Yeah, in some capacities. Not all, but some capacities. But the youth of today, they're not playing. And I'm so grateful.
I know.
I really am.
It's amazing to watch them.
Yeah, so that's just a little bit about, you know, what I've recognized, what I've experienced. I have definitely been watching a lot of documentaries, and I really recommend folks to watch When They See Us. When They See Us and the movie, the documentary 13th, both done by Ava, the director Ava. How do you pronounce her last name?
Devereaux?
Devereaux?
We should have looked that up. Keep talking. I'll look it up.
So, I should know her name and know how to pronounce it. But
DuVernay. So,
there's a great show.
Ava DuVernay.
Yes. So Ava DuVernay directed the documentary, the 13th, that came out a couple years ago, I believe. And then she released last year, last May, she released When They See Us. It's a limited series, 4 episodes. I encourage all of you listening right now to watch the documentary 13th first, and then watch When They See Us, and understand that everything that you learned and how it applies in that context. It is incredibly powerful. One of the most powerful, visceral films I've seen ever. She's incredibly brilliant. And then let me know what you think. I want to hear from you. I want to know. So I'm holding all of you accountable who's listening today. It will change you, and for the better. You will get to experience something that I don't think I was planning on experience, even as a person of color. So there's that. I really encourage all of you to do that. But today's episode, we really want to focus on racial justice and really focus on allyship. And so we decided, because of everything that's going on, I've seen community really show up, and I thank you. I seen friends put together materials. I've actually had friends reach out and say, how can I support you? And I've delegated tasks to friends to put together my link tree with resources and put together images of books, because in the end, everybody needs to get educated. Everybody needs to get tools. Everyone. This includes POC folks who aren't Black as well. Like, there's not one person who can't learn something from what's currently going on today. So on that note,
and we also want to make sure that it keeps going. Like, just even as the protests stop and that incredible surge of energy changes into the next phase, which always happens, this is part of keeping it going. This is an essential piece, right?
Right. I mean, that's why I was asking everyone to join, and we can go in. We'll get into that in this episode, but there are action items that will allow you to sustain this movement. Because, yeah, like anything, right? We get really amped up. We're gonna start dieting. We're gonna start eating better. We're gonna fight for racial justice. And then suddenly, you know, our attention gets diverted, right? So how do we make a commitment to racial justice? How do we make a commitment, a lifelong commitment to allyship? How do we do that? And that's what we're gonna talk about in today's episode, because this is forever, for life.
Right. There
not just today. This is not a moment. It's not a month.
Yeah. And to make sure that it's sustainable too, right? So we want to also present it in a way that can be done for life, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And the thing is that because Black lives are being murdered regularly, it does feel overwhelming at first. And that now you can imagine how the Black community feels, right? When their brothers and sisters, their children are being taken from them on a daily basis. So I just really encourage everyone who's listening today to really make this a part of their daily lives and make it a priority for the sake of humanity.
Of humanity, yes. And the world, like, we're in a shift. The world is shifting. In many ways, we don't know where that's going to go. We never know. We can never predict the future. But the shift is real. It's a collective shift, right? It's been happening since 2016. And it's so many people are called to this, right? Which is what you and I are seeing. And waking up. And that is so profound to actually be alive during a time when you see collective waking up in this way and seeing big shifts. And then it just, it does befall on those of us that really get this and really care and want to be a part of the solution to stay connected to all the ways that we can be a part of that, including inner work and outer work. And, in a sustainable way, you know, so that it's, we just keep doing it and we don't give up. We don't get tired. We don't get burnt out.
And that's what's so fantastic is that we're still able to stay on, brand. Cause we are caught every episode. We want to highlight the inner and the outer.
Yes.
Right. And that still applies to this concept as to this movement, to our mission, and to our personal missions now, right?
That's right.
So let's talk about that. Let's start actually with the inner, right? So Lord and I broke this down into basically three major points. And I'll just quickly go over those with you. So we want to talk about admitting that racism is real. And I know that might sound silly, right? Probably because those of you who are listening are actually past that, have surpassed that. Right. But a lot of folks have not admitted that. And that's what we're encouraging all of us. That's why we all have to get the tools and continue to be resilient and sustain this, because folks still have a hard time admitting that, that it exists, that it's real. The second part of our today's episode, we're gonna talk about tools. And our third part, we're going to talk about taking action. So, Lauren, do you want to talk about admitting that racism is real as a white woman?
Yes, I do. I think, you know, it is an inside job, first off, for white people. There's a lot of resistance to that. And as Robin DiAngelo called it, white fragility. And the inner work is, of course, just admitting it and admitting the systemicness of it, that our country was founded, created, developed on racism.
Whether it was designed.
Designed with racism threaded throughout the whole. I mean, I remember before this tipping point, yes, we might say that Thomas Jefferson had slaves and then, you know, had a relationship with one of them. But then it would be like, but he's still this great man. And I obviously, this is not black and white thinking, either or. Life is very nuanced. And when you do wake up, you live in the nuances. But we have to be real about how the founding fathers were slave owners. And then at the same time, we're saying this country is founded on everyone is equal, and that has never been the case.
Yeah. I mean, white lies, that's what I like to call it.
Yeah, the white lies. So, but, you know, for white people who have privilege and have benefited from this, this is not easy stuff to admit internally, externally. So I wanted to read a couple of Robin DiAngelo's. Okay, so, you know, for white people, it's not easy to admit internally and externally. And they both can be very, very equal in the difficulty in coming to the truth about this, because the internal will have fragility around it, defensiveness around it, and the external will be like, I'm afraid I'm gonna say the wrong thing, or I'm gonna be shamed or what have you for not really understanding it. So the definition of white fragility is discomfort and defensiveness on the part of a white person when confronted by information about racial inequality and injustice. White fragility functions to block the challenge and regain white racial equilibrium. And a big part of Robin DiAngelo's work is, yes, racism exists for all people of color, but we live in a particularly anti-Black world. And that's why right now it's been about Black lives, period, full stop, because that exposure of anti-Blackness has never been looked at in this way since the 60s, right? So, and so our inner work is really facing our own fragility around it, you know? And if it does make you feel awful or bad or cringe or what have you, that you have been complicit, you have, you know, benefited from this system, you have ignored it, you haven't really paid attention to what's been going on to Black lives and all the murders going on, just sit with that. You know, it, admitting it and, you know, just sitting with the healthy shame and doing the inner work will benefit you in so many ways because you will get beyond it.
Will you remind our listeners what healthy shame is?
So healthy shame is when we're actually have done something that has some shame involved in it. And it's healthy to have shame around it. It's not toxic shame. It's not something even, it's not a negative message you've internalized from a dominant world or a shaming world. It's like, oh, wait, you know, I actually should feel some shame around this, but that doesn't ultimately make me a bad person. You know, the system has been built in such a way that also white people are not going to be looking at this. So that, you know, the healthy shame though is that, okay, I have not been paying any attention to this or not been doing anything about it or kind of sort of paid attention, but then ignored the things that I can ignore because it doesn't really affect me. But I'm no longer going to do that. And I feel bad about that. It's okay to feel bad about that. And then move through it, right?
I love it. Well said, Lauren. Thank you for that. You know, I want to add to your, in terms of common behaviors with white fragility, is something that I like to call white paralysis. And I've been witnessing it in the course of the last couple of months because of this uprising. And I'm seeing it particularly with Generation X and older. So I identify as a elder millennial. And I believe millennials started a lot of this work. And not, I shouldn't say started. They started their journeys in racial justice work, I think, earlier on. I had friends like in college who was starting this work. I know this work has been going on for generations, but I think on a larger collective, I think there was a huge a massive movement to acquire this knowledge and to understand it more in depth with millennials. Nevertheless, the white paralysis I've been observing is this overwhelming, this becoming completely overwhelmed with this awareness, as if the veil has been lifted.
Yes.
And you finally see what this world or what this country really is.
Yeah, and what's really going on.
You finally see the what institutional racism looks like. You know, you're seeing these videos on Instagram or Facebook of men and women being murdered by the hands of police on a daily basis. You're like, how does that happen? That I've never seen that before. This happens? I mean, these are questions that are completely paralyzing certain white communities because they were just completely protected from those realities. So, and they're also realizing that, or recognizing that they have a very different relationship with police. They actually feel safe with police. They actually have spent centuries being protected by police. And I think a lot of white folks are now realizing that the root of the police were actually slave catchers.
Yes.
I don't think white folks knew that. So now they're acquiring all this information and these visuals and these videos, and they are completely overwhelmed and their whole systems are shutting down. And now they could be crying, they can going through their own personal emotions, rage, all the things, but they literally don't know what to do first because they're starting to see it all kind of unfold in front of them. And it is paralyzing. It is paralyzing to realize that your entire upbringing in terms of education was filtered, in a lot of ways was a lie, realizing that you were duped in a lot of ways, that you are not living the same reality as Black community. And it's not about culture. You're literally living a different reality in terms of access, safety. I mean, and this applies in all different opportunity. Yeah, I mean, we talk about diversity, inclusion, and equity all the time, but I don't think the white community understood how systemic all of this was.
No.
Right?
And education lies to us, you know. The stories were told.
I mean, there's so much.
Yeah.
There's so much. Everything from the products on the shelf, the corporate products, to the education, everything. So, you know, why is knowing, you know, anyway, that's a different, I don't want to get into that tangent as to why education was formed the way it was, but in the end,
it's all connected.
Yeah, it's all connected and it's all intentional, but here we are. And so white paralysis is real. So my point is, if you are experiencing white paralysis, just acknowledge that you're overwhelmed and that you're freezing and that you don't know what to do and you don't know what the first step, what the next step is. Because I think that's a lot of it too. A lot of white folks reached out to me asking, like, you know, what can I do? Or, you know, they want to make sure their money goes to the right organization. They want to make sure that, like, the steps they take are the right steps, and they're overthinking it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
There is no, like, right, just do. Right.
But also, it's okay, like, when you're waking up to something so big and you are feeling paralyzed and overwhelmed, that's part of the process of waking up always to anything that you were completely unconscious to before. So, but that doesn't last forever. It's a part of the waking up process.
Yeah. But also, I just want to encourage folks not to stay in it.
No, I don't want, I'm not saying that. I'm just normalizing it.
Yeah, I mean, you can, experience it is totally normal. But also know that in order to kind of disrupt that paralysis is by taking action. So, and that kind of leads us into tools.
Right.
Right. And our next part of this conversation is tools. And I was really offering guidance to my community in terms of joining racial justice organizations. Now, racial justice organizations, there's so many. However, ones that I really support, really, and what I would actually recommend, depends on where you are in your own journey. Some folks have been doing the work. Some folks have been reading the book. Some folks are already there. But if you are brand new, if you are just a newbie to racial justice and you are coming out of white paralysis, I highly recommend that you start going to, or you start joining a local AWARE group. It's called AWARE LA. That's the acronym. And the organization's name is Alliance of White Anti-Racists Everywhere, Los Angeles. So Google Alliance of White Anti-Racists Everywhere, LA, or AWARE LA. That is where you can start taking the initial steps of unpacking your whiteness, unpacking your white privilege, unpacking all the things in a space of white folks. It is safe and it gives you the opportunity to really peel the layers of the onion back, because there's a lot of layers. And once you get to that, you know, even if you, I mean, that's what's so intense about racism, is that even once you get to that place where you've been able to unpack all of it and really make peace with it and know how to take action and become a true ally, you then have to deal with your family. Mm-hmm. You then have to deal with what's in your backyard. And that's all part of the work too. That's all part of allyship too. Once you get through the family, then you have to deal with what's happening at your work. That's part of allyship as well. You know, if you're a student and you're going to a university of some sort, then you have to address it at the university. It is everywhere. And so AWARE is a really great starting point for those who are just needing a place to really unpack their fragility, because they're really great at holding space for you. And you, once you develop your capacity and your resiliency and realize that this isn't about you, this is about stuff that was placed on all of us, but you did benefit from it, and you unconsciously participated in it, and reconciling that. So,
and then that's not okay with you, here are ways to do something about it.
Absolutely. And then once you graduate, that's what I like to call it. We're going to include a ton of resources for you. But when you graduate, that's what I like to call it, from AWARE, then I would recommend joining, if you are white People for Black Lives. And they are a phenomenal organization that understands the needs and the demands of the Black community and wants to truly help uplift the Black community and support them in ways that actually, I mean, I've seen protests where White People for Black Lives as an org will surround themselves and create them, use their bodies as a barrier to protect Black Lives Matter orgs. That's how deep this is. They literally understand that their skin is protection,
right?
Their skin color. So really radical stuff. Once you're there, if that's what, you know, speaks to you, it speaks to some. But yeah, I just really, really recommend, in terms of tools. We're also going to include a link called Guide to Allyship that has a ton of wonderful information for you to review and just kind of sit with. But I have to say, one thing that I really love that's like a specific tool that I really appreciate being taught in racial justice work is this this need to call in, not call out. And it's just a really simple thing that you can start doing now, right? Before you even attend your first AWARE LA meeting or dialogue, before you do anything formal, you can immediately start implementing how to call people in and not call them out. Because we don't want, the way this movement works is by getting people curious and getting them to really look at. We do not gain anything from shaming each other.
That's right. That just shuts people down or pushes them away.
Yeah.
So can you say a little bit more about calling in, not calling out? Exactly what does that mean?
Yeah. It's literally if you see or experience something that you might feel or think is racist, it's really about just calling attention to it in a way that's respectful. So if, as a white person, if you see another white person doing something, it could be gentle. Just saying, hey, I recognize that, you said that. Do you have some time to talk about that? I want to understand what that was about. Being curious, inviting them to have conversation. And not that you are now the master facilitator, not that you have all the tools, but just by you being listening to this episode today, it's indicating that you're interested in doing the work and you're interested in being an ally. And we can start being allies immediately just by calling in a conversation, just by recognizing that something happened that doesn't feel right, that feels hurtful, could feel offensive, and then talking to that person who made the offensive statement or act, and asking them politely and kind to, I would like to talk about what that incident was, and start seeing where that goes, where that conversation goes. I don't think we encourage ourselves and each other to do that. It takes courage. And it's not something we're taught.
Right. So. And I think, is it okay if I jump in?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Jump in.
So all of these tools are essential. Obviously, if you're more of an introvert, white fragility is a great place to start too, just because if you're not really ready to join a group or you don't have time, get the Audible, read the book, YouTube Robin DiAngelo and see some of her talks, just like get, educated around this as well, as far as the inner work. And then what I found as a white person finding myself in a lot of white spaces, just because of the world of my world, this movement, this incredible space we find ourselves in, has afforded me to have conversations in white spaces with white people that never before seemed to have, there never seemed to be really that permission, right? And having the conversation about what's going on with our racist system and what's been happening to Black people and in the Black community, having it whether people around you want to have it or not, you have it anyway. You have it anyway because now you have permission, right? Like never before. And you will see a lot of white paralysis when you're having these conversations. You'll see people that are not talking. Now, it might be because they're having paralysis. It might be that they're not comfortable talking in a group environment, whatever it is. But having this conversation, regardless of whether you're making some people uncomfortable, is imperative, because we're no longer, when you want to really be a real ally, worrying about how it makes people uncomfortable.
Lauren, thank you so much for sharing that. Would you be open to sharing your story around that, around how we as people make choices because we don't want to make others uncomfortable?
Yeah.
I mean, you were sharing with me a really great story about some reflection you had about your own upbringing.
With my mom?
Yeah.
So my mom was racist, but that's not the story we're going to have. She was also really homophobic and lesbian phobic. And she never could come to terms with my sexual orientation. So I would come out. She wouldn't talk to me. I would go back into the closet. I spent years being uncomfortable around my own sexual identity so that she was okay. I was very codependent around her feelings. Now, I still love my mom. She's passed away, but I love her deeply. This was a very serious, flawed part of her that never got reconciled. But the point is, I did a lot of work, deep inner work, around my own internalized homophobia, internalized lesbian phobia. And I finally went to family therapy with my mom and my dad around coming out and not going back anymore. And I looked at her, and this was an insight that I had come to on my own. And I looked at her and I said, I've spent my entire life making sure you're not uncomfortable around this. I'm no longer doing that. It's your turn to be uncomfortable. Go. I'm not taking care of you anymore. And I was using that analogy with Alana to say, that is where we are as white people now. We have been forcing the Black community to be uncomfortable around everything that they've had to put up with, around our silence, our ignorance, our willful ignorance, our denial. And they've been holding this discomfort for us. And it's now our turn. It's our turn to be uncomfortable. And that's okay. It's the least we can do. And it will shift and change and get easier. And being an ally is so incredible and rewarding. And, you know, and it's got to be done. We don't have a choice. Like, you know, when anyone is a minority, any minority needs allies to change the system, because just the numbers, right? You know, you just have to have. And in this sense, the dominant culture is so white and so systemically racist that we have to undo our racism to change the system from the ground up.
Thank you so much for sharing your story, Lauren. I think it's really important for folks to hear how maybe they've had an experience like that in their own lives. Maybe it didn't have to deal with racism. Maybe it had to deal with other aspects of their identities where they've had to kind of shift and conform or assimilate in order to make the collective or the larger collective comfortable. But today's not that day. Today, we are done with that. We have lost so much time and so many lives.
So many lives, yes.
Okay? Yes. Every day we wake up and breathe, we are lucky. We are privileged, or we are gifted with another day. So that's how I see it, right? I want to spend each day committed, because I do not take this life for granted.
Right, exactly.
And I do not.
Yeah, and that's really important.
So
thank you, Alana.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. It's important for us to not be complicit, to not be silent, and to speak up. And I just encourage all of you. And, you know, I understand that there's introverts, and I understand, like, it's good to read the books and, my, you know, join book clubs. But can I just speak to white book clubs right now?
Oh, are they?
My mom joined one.
Oh, that's right.
My mom joined one. I love my mom. She's a white woman. She is doing all the things, right? I give her like list of homework. She's doing the research. She's trying to update her profile. She's updating her files. And she's on board, right? She's like, how do I do this? You know, she was given zero tools and is absolutely been a fantastic mom, but never practiced anti-racism work, right? So I've been doing a lot of coaching with her over the years, but she's joined an all-woman, white woman book club, and they're reading White Fragility. And she sent me the link about it. And I said, you know, Mom, it's great that you're, you know, participating in this book club, but I did research on this psychologist, and this or licensed social worker. I don't know exactly her title, but she has done zero racial justice work. I don't see anywhere on her website or her LinkedIn or anything that she's even taken one racial justice workshop, let alone, you know, and I know it's a book club. I get it's a book club, but this is serious. This book club should be facilitated by someone who understands the complexities, or else all of you are just going to be sitting in this, you know, what is it called? Echo chamber, right? Will anyone really be challenging you to think beyond and do beyond and take action beyond? So I did go and research, and I quickly found a licensed psychologist who's up in the Bay in Oakland, who has done a ton of racial justice work, right? So there are white psychologists, white women psychologists, who have done a ton of racial justice work that exists in this world that should be facilitating these book clubs, in my opinion. So just keep that in mind, everyone, that when you hear that, like, okay, I'm reading the books, I'm educating myself, I'm trying to, you know, get up to speed, that's great. But at some point, there needs to be practice. Yes. It can't just be like absorption of information.
No.
You at some point have to transition and start applying this information. And what's the best way to apply that information education is by joining an organization.
Right.
And that's why I recommend, even for the introverts, these are safe spaces. Don't worry. If you need to read the books first, go for it. But I encourage these book clubs to also, after they read the book, to join the organization.
Right.
Because that's when you actually, put the work into play, into motion.
Yep.
Or the knowledge into motion. So that's all. That's my
and more integration, and integration of the knowledge, right? Because you're,
So but, that it's, but it's the skills, right?
Right.
How but do you, how do you hone your skills?
Yeah.
Because it's a whole new skill set now.
Yes, it is. Very, very much so.
Yeah. So we can learn the history, which is essential because we're repeating it. We're repeating it. If you read the new Jim Crow, literally, there was a time, this uprising that's happening, I mean, this is why I'm encouraging everyone to also know their history and know the history, because if we don't know the history, it will repeat itself.
It always does.
It always does. Yes. And I'm concerned because there was a time, the whole reason why racism was birthed was to divide us. Anti-blackness was the purpose to divide us. The poor were already standing side by side. They were ready together as one. They did not see the difference. It was elitism versus the poor. And so here we are, this uprising of all the folks coming together. But the thing about, I gotta read you this incredible quote. And it says, preservation through transformation, said by Reva Siegel. And I love this quote because racism has been preserved over the centuries because it evolved, because it changed, it shifted,
right.
It transformed, right. It looked different.
Right. It keeps morphing. Yes.
Right? So we need to understand how this morphs. And if we don't eradicate it, it will morph like a disease, uh-huh. Another illness into something else.
Exactly. Just like these pandemics do, just like these COVIDs do.
Just like viruses. Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it is. I mean, racism is a virus.
That's right.
So we need to be hyper vigilant and hyper conscious that if we are not committed to anti-racism work, meaning it being integrated in our weekly lives, doing calls to action, not just during protests, but really calling out our elected officials.
And voting them out. I mean, we'll get into that under tools, but we've got, right? Like taking action, I mean.
Yeah. Yes. You know,
the voting out, this is very important. And And it, you know, I'm sorry, now I'm, it's like, we got to get rid of these. I mean, we vote judges in. We can get rid of these judges. We can get.
Yeah, taking action. We're talking about taking action. Sheriff, right now. Go for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, sheriffs, like, vote these fuckers out.
They have to go. Legislators, council members, corporations, CEOs. I mean, they're everywhere. And they need to be held accountable. But they need to be held accountable by the larger collective.
Right.
And they won't listen. They won't listen to Black community.
Right. And the bottom line is, though, that pressure does work.
Absolutely.
It really does work.
You know, California, I was sharing with Lauren about this, but in California right now, we are pushing for ACA 5 and ACA 6. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time, but you can Google that. Okay. These are measures. But what I've also learned in my time of just really going down the rabbit hole of California is how racist California's history has been. So we act and pretend like we're this really progressive state, but the truth is we're really not. It's really a lie we keep telling ourselves. And frankly, I'm over it. So, it's really hard to prosecute cops in the state of California because of qualified immunity. And because of the pressure you're talking about, Lauren, there's a nationwide pressure to have those four cops arrested for George Floyd.
Yes.
That would have never happened.
Exactly.
It took a whole country.
Yes.
A whole country. You kidding me? So you're telling me that every time a cop murders an innocent person, we need a whole country to rain down hell. Do you know the challenge of that ask? It is infuriating to me.
It's infuriating. So, yeah. And that's, it's only just happening, right? You know, and obviously with Rodney King, those cops got off.
You know, right. That was 25 years ago.
Yeah. Like, so this is, you know, but we're here now. The pressure actually is working. I do want to just say really quickly, we also need to be aware of the constant backlash or the other side. So that those cops were arrested and the man that did murder George Floyd, who put his knee on his back, was, there was a GoFundMe for his bail, which was $1.2 million, and they made the money and he was let out on bail.
All four of them?
No, just the one, I'm not going to give him his name.
Yeah, oh, okay. But one of them.
The one who murdered him, the one who actually put the knee on his back.
So he's bailed out.
Yes, $1.2 million was raised by the other side, the white supremacist, raised $1.2 million to bail him out because the judge put bail at $1.2 million, which seemed unreachable on a cop's salary.
So he's out on bail until his trial.
Exactly.
Wow. I did not know that. When did that happen?
Like last week.
So, okay.
The point is we just also need to be aware on some level of what's going on the other side. Just so we also need to keep abreast of that as allies. You know?
So let me just quickly tune everyone in so they can Google this. So Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley, she is really pushing for ending Qualified Immunity Act. Okay. Google this. And I will put a link on our episode. But if you Google Ending Qualified Immunity Act, this will help us. This will give us the opportunity for families who unfortunately have had a member, murdered by the hands of the police to file a lawsuit and to actually hold these officers accountable.
Yeah.
Right now, they're basically protected. They're basically, they have the license to kill. That is terrifying. So please look up this act, this measure. Please support it. Please make sure that everybody you know knows about this act. This, in my opinion, will be so transformative to the legal system. So I just want to put that out there. I really want to highlight that because it is, this is a moment right now where we, all this energy we're directing towards these four cops and the cops of Breonna, which, you know, where's all the attention about the cops for Breonna? Taylor, yeah. Right? We're right. Still waiting. Only one of them was charged.
That's right.
So we still got to apply pressure.
Oh, yeah. They were fired.
So okay. If we can get, yeah, I mean, that took a while.
That took a while.
Before they were just, one of them was fired. The other ones were just reassigned to a desk job. That's what they do. They just reassign them to an office job. But this, my friend, ending Qualified Immunity Act will give the people the ability to hold police officers accountable. So please look into that. That is definitely my ask and a call to action of all of you. Please put on your social media, please share it far and wide, and let's make sure that this gets through Congress and gets passed. So.
And I just wanted to say lastly, you know, that when the Catholic Church's hiding of pedophiles was finally exposed, like, this is the same, like, we are now finding out that you are a murderer and a cop, you get a desk assignment. You don't get fired and lose your pension and get arrested and get charged with murder. You get hidden. You get hidden somewhere, reassigned.
You know? That is a great, great parallel.
It's
exactly
the same thing, and it's a corrupt system.
That blew my mind when I found out about that. That priests just get reassigned to a new church. Like, are you kidding me?
Yeah. It's like, oh, okay. So no wonder they're not worried. No wonder they're running out of there, killing with impunity.
Right. So that's, you know, I hope everyone was able to get some nuggets of information from today's episode.
We will have all of the resources, the links and things at the bottom of the podcast as usual. So you can click on certain things and start doing your own due diligence. We will also have a link to a newsletter that I wrote about four steps to white allyship. And so we're all doing our part here. I know those of you who are listening to us today are doing your part. Obviously, there are stages. You might be at the beginning, as Ilana said, or you might be much further along. In any case, we've been here to reach out to everyone and call you in, and let's do this. Let's do this together.
Yes, because I'm tired.
Yeah, right. It's exhausting. It's just...
Dismantling systems of oppression is no joke.
It's not a joke.
Yeah.
But we've got to have hope because this right now is the hope.
Yeah.
What's happening is the hope, right?
Yeah.
We just can't let that go through because something else that catches
us. Well, be ready for that.
Yeah. And be ready
Don't
for that.
Don't be surprised. Yeah. Be prepared that is a possibility. That is how they derail movements like this historically. Yeah.
It's so true.
So. Yeah, just you know, when you dive into the new Jim Crow, which I recommend, you will start to see these patterns repeat.
Exactly. Yeah.
And we're back there right now, so get ready.
Get ready. Ilana, thank you so much for today. It was incredible.
Thanks,
Lauren.
All
the passion and work and research. I know you've been just for the last month. Eating, drinking, sleeping this, right? And going through an incredible, painful process, right? But here you are to help guide us, and I so appreciate it.
Yeah, somehow I got through to the other end. And I appreciate you for just really trying to keep us moving and getting us back on because it's overwhelming. It is overwhelming.
Yes, it is.
It's overwhelming, but this is part of the work, right?
That's right.
This is part of our commitment. We have to show up.
That's right. Exactly.
Even though I want to scream.
And you can do that too. Not, you don't, yeah.
Yeah. Folks, you're so lucky. If you caught me 3 weeks ago, the rage and the tears and the deep sadness, and you wouldn't have been able to understand a word today.
Right. Exactly.
The range and the seesaw of emotions are so real.
But that's part of the inner work, right, Alana? That's part of the processing. Like that, those feelings have been in there for a really long time, and this helped them come out, right? And that's such a part of the process. We have to heal as well so that we can build the resilience, the window of tolerance, the capacity to then show up in a sustainable way and keep utilizing our tools and taking action.
Yes, I love it. Yes, I'm really inspired this week specifically, like after going through all of that tornado hurricane of emotions, you know, the highs and lows, to be at a place now where I'm like, okay, this week, what's my call to action this week? You know, which life that was taken from us am I focusing on today?
Right, exactly.
Right? Yeah. Am I going after the cops? You know what I mean? Is my focus for the cops, like making sure they, because you know, that they tend to kind of fade to the background.
Mm-hmm. They sure do.
So we gotta bring them to the focus again.
That's right.
Right? It's like, I love you, Breonna Taylor. In order to honor your life, let's get those faces back on the front page.
Yes,
again.
Justice.
Right. So we got to keep moving those murders we just have to, it's on us.
That's right.
It's on us. So.
All right.
Thank you
so much, Alana.
Thanks, Lauren. Thanks everyone. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah. And we will be back soon.
Peace and love. Appreciate all of you so much.
So much.
Lots of love.
Bye.
All right. Bye.
The Consciousness Salon is owned, operated, and produced by Alana Roche and Dr. Lauren. Music is produced by DJ Roche and edited by Tyler Hood.
We would love to hear from you, and there are a number of ways to contact us. My website is www.drlaurencostine.com. That is DrLaurenCostine.com. And I also have a Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram page.
You can reach me at www.theboundaryboss.com. That is TheBoundaryBoss.com. And The Boundary Boss is on both Instagram and Twitter.
This podcast represents the opinions of Dr. Lauren Costine and Alana Roche and their guests on the show. The content here should not be taken as medical advice. It is for informational purposes only, and because each person is so unique, please consult your healthcare professional for any medical or mental health questions. Thank you.